Our next speaker is Richard Harris. Now, Richard has a background in local government, he's awarded an MA in Cornish Studies, and he's currently a PhD researcher at the Institute of Cornish Studies. And today, as you see, he's going to be talking on the subject, can Cornish identity, culture and ethnicity influence how national policies are implemented in Cornwall? Richard.
Thank you, Gary. I suppose I could start off by saying, you know, everybody says, look what they've done now. Well, I was one of them. So, you know, the people you've always wanted to get at and harangue. Well, when I was important, I used to be one of those people. When Colette originally asked me to talk, or Gary asked me to talk, but Colette gave me the title, she said, I would like you to talk on does Cornish identity, culture, etc., etc., influence how national policies are implemented? And I said, well, the answer is probably is no, so it's going to be a very short talk. But since, well, anyway, Gary would have caught up with his programme if I just said that. So I changed it to can, because I think that's a bit more optimistic. And if I sort of move on to what I'm going to try and do, and talk about really three things. One is top-down approaches to planning and housing as well. The two are very intimately related. Secondly, the opportunity presented by cultural change in Cornwall and Cornish identity. And thirdly, and very importantly, the sort of things that Tim was beginning to touch on, the need for a political response, but possibly my solution would be different from his. This is well known to you. This is population change in Cornwall since 1961. And as you can see, we've had an increase of nearly 60% since 1961. And the local plan for Cornwall forecasts a further increase of 15%. And this has underlined the context of planning in Cornwall for the past 50 years or so. But it has generated some opposition, a lot of it coming from the Institute of Cornish Studies. You remember Gary talked about Charles Thomas, the second director of the Institute. Well, in his inaugural address in 1963, Charles Thomas was very critical of planners and the county council at that time in encouraging more population growth. And this was taken up in more detail in, I suppose, a seminal piece of work, Cornwall at the Crossroads, which was by Bernard Deakin, Andrew George and Ronald Perry. I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. And it continues with Bernard Deakin's polemic, or you might say howl of rage, which is the great sale of Cornwall. And basically, those three publications are actually saying roughly the same thing, although they say it in different words and with different degrees of vehemence. And we know, you're sure people in this seminar know that we have the implications of this is a increased house prices, the list that's up there on the slide. And what all the commentators have said is that population growth in Cornwall has not addressed, as people thought it would at one stage, the endemic issues of low earnings, pockets of high deprivation, poverty and so on. So the failure of planning policies in the past has been that it hasn't controlled growth, rather it's encouraged it. And if you want to sort of boil this down to the essentials, then what's happened is that we've got continuing levels of growth which are not sustainable, both environmentally but also culturally, because certainly Charles Thomas and the others did feel that this continuing influx of people into Cornwall would dilute Cornish ethnicity and identity. Indeed, that the Cornish would be a minority in their own country. So we now move on to housing, and this is where we get to the top-down bit. Across the UK, again, you'll have been familiar with this, there is an aspiration to build 200,000 houses per annum. And we're currently building about half this amount. But housing is now a key issue for all political parties. You've heard the party conferences. Housing has come to the forefront in a way that it didn't in the previous election, and it will be a major issue in the next one. The emerging Cornwall local plan suggests that by 31 we'll have an additional 47,500, and before anybody from Cornwall Council jumps in and says no, it won't be that, they're quite right, it will be about half that number, because half of those have either been built already or have planning permission. But nationally, Cornwall is seen as an area of housing stress. And I'll use this. This is a map from Home Truths 2014 from the National Housing Federation. And what it does, it looks at house price affordability ratios with house prices as a multiple of earnings. And you'll see, as you would expect, around the London area, a very high ratio. But Cornwall, and also Dorset, but Cornwall and the South West generally, but Cornwall in particular, stands out as a sore thumb. And if you look at the next slide, which is rent price affordability, you'll see that Cornwall is also in the next highest category. These, by the way, I ought to explain, these are not local authority boundaries. These are local enterprise partnership boundaries, which means that, you know, you get a bit of a strange combination of Devon and Somerset. But essentially, Cornwall stands on its own. We didn't want to go in with anybody else, so we're there as Cornwall. And consequently, what this shows is rent price affordability, again, as a ratio of as a multiple of earnings. So if you're sitting, my point is that if you're sitting in the Department of Communities and Local Government and you're looking at planning policy on a national front, you're going to say to yourself, well, Cornwall need a lot of houses because there's a lot of housing stress there. And that's the level of debate that will go on at national level. So the people who get very excited about the numbers of homes that Cornwall Council are proposing to put into their local plan have got to bear in mind, or should bear in mind, the fact is that however much Cornwall Council may want to adopt a more sustainable policy, this is being driven by national policies. And we've already touched on this earlier this morning about the National Planning Policy Framework. Edwina mentioned it. Now, I think the current government have done a brilliant job in actually perpetuating the myth that somehow they've torn up all the regulations about planning and communities will be able to do their own planning. We're going to have bottom-up neighbourhood plans. Fantastic. However, if you look at what the local plan for Cornwall says, it takes its cue from the NPPF. Neighbourhood plans have to take into account the NPPF, but they also have to take account of Cornwall local plan as well. So when you actually look at the flexibility that neighbourhood plans have, you'll see it's pretty limited. There's an interesting situation in St Ives at the moment where they're trying to address issues of second homes and holiday lets, and they're saying we want this to be made a special use, essentially. So if you want to convert your home to a holiday let, you have to apply for planning permission. Sandy George's, where he's coming from that direction. There are also issues about council tax and all the rest. Now, that's great, but it's not planning, and it won't be delivered through this process. Land use planning is land use planning, And unfortunately, that's how it's perceived. But to now turn to the other theme of this conference, which is identity and ethnicity, and how does this play? Well, despite Bernard Deakin's prediction that the Cornish would be pushed out of Cornwall by inward migration, in fact, when you look at some of the numbers, that hasn't happened to the extent that perhaps it might be expected to. I expect some of you from Cornwall Council will know about the pupil level annual school census regarding those kids that identify as Cornish, and this has increased from 24% in 2006 to 41% in 2011. We also had in the last census a write-in option that if you identified as your principal ethnicity or part of your ethnicity is Cornish, you could record that. And indeed, you could in the 2001 census, and according to the numbers, we've got twice as many Cornish people in 2011 as we had in 2001. Indeed, there aren't very many, we're still 14%, but it's a 100% increase in 10 years. And interestingly, in the 2011 census, some areas, one of the areas I've looked at, Tranmere, a state in Penzance that some of you may know, which vies with Pengegan in Cambourne as the most deprived area of Cornwall. Almost 25% of the people on Tranmere identify as Cornish, which is pretty remarkable, really, when you think you have to write it. Tranmere isn't the sort of place where you think people would write in. They might tick a box, but would they write in? And even Bernard, I wish he was here actually, because then he could attack me, but he says in his latest publication, despite the mass migration since the 1960s, or perhaps because of it, we, i.e. the Cornish, are not only still here, but uncannily our numbers are increasing. And I think what that says is that people have many different ways of identifying as Cornish. Again, it was mentioned this morning about people who adopt the Cornish ethnicity. And in my research in Penzance, I would say there are a multitude of ways of expressing yourself as Cornish, rather than perhaps what people have tended to say, as Charles Thomas did, well, if your parents weren't Cornish, you aren't Cornish. No, but that, I think, is eroded and is no longer the case. I suppose the other thing that's happened is we've now got national minority status, and perhaps we're not quite sure what it means. But if you look at the document that made the case for national minority status, it actually emphasised the importance of place. Indeed, there is the poem that prefaces that document by Paul Farmer, and it was translated by Paul Hodge, says that it's entitled "We Are of This Place." And if you look at the arguments for minority status, a lot of them revolve around the issue of place. So I'll come back to that in a minute. We also have from Cornwall Council a cultural strategy now, or a white paper. Now, I think one might criticise it in terms of it's linking culture very much with the economy of Cornwall, for understandable reasons. I think there might be a danger there of a degree of commodification of what Cornish culture is. But nevertheless, you wouldn't have got 20 years ago a white paper from Cornwall County Council on Cornish culture. So moving on to link these two bits, cultural identity with placemaking. Now, planners are supposed to be about placemaking. This is what we're supposed to be doing, and we're involved in policies in landscaping, design, settlement patterns. And in the emerging local plan for Cornwall, and I can't say I've read all 1,000 pages of documentation that it consists of, but you can find, and you know, without I'm not criticising Cornwall Council and condemning them out of hand. You can actually see bits of policy which actually recognise Cornish difference. So they do talk about a dispersed spatial strategy which recognises a Cornwall of small towns and independent communities. They also talk about, in Objective 10 of the local plan, the need to respect Cornwall's special character and distinctiveness, its history and historical environment. What they don't do, however, is put forward a sustained argument against the application of national housing policies. There is stuff in there about second homes and so on, but there isn't, to my mind, a sustained argument which could challenge the top-down approach that I've already talked about. There is also a continuation, tends to be a continuation of a tourist-centric low-wage employment policies, and there is no acknowledgement that sustainable policies and the continuation and development of Cornish ethnicity and difference are inextricably linked. So if we then go back to the original question, which is can the implementation of national policies and so on, I think the answer is still not much, but it's better than it was. I think that what we don't have, and what I don't think the answer to this is based on the processes of policy making as contained in the local plan and the plan making process, but I think rather than a lack of political leadership and a lack of will and a view of Cornwall generally as a perpetual victim, and I think unfortunately this is part of our political culture. This has been mentioned already this morning. We have a view that we have things done to us rather than trying to shape the agenda ourselves. And if you look at what's happened in the north of England, you'll see that there, in fact, they have actually tried to grab the agenda, tried to prepare a case for a counter-magnet to London. And this has taken a long time to prepare. It isn't something that's just happened because George Osborne happened to go up there and started talking about HS3, I think. It's because they've got quality local politicians and they're also backed up with some really good policy advice from their officers. So my view is that if it can be done there, why can't it be done in Cornwall? Because we have things here that the north of England doesn't have. We have a culture which is unique and distinctive. Now, all right, if there's any Yorkshire or Lancastrians in the audience, they're going to say, well, they've got the same thing as well. But I would argue we're different. As a Cornishman, I would, wouldn't I? But there we are. To be heard in having that conversation, we need to demonstrate that we're different. And I don't think that's been done sufficiently in Cornwall. We need to say or show that there's a huge difference between Reading and Redruth or Cheltenham and Camborne or Truro and Tunbridge Wells. We need to be able to demonstrate that. Not just say we think there is, we need to be able to demonstrate it. Now that might be difficult, but we need to try. And we need to get across the fundamental point that to address our problems needs not national but local solutions, because we've tried national policies. We've tried them for 50 years, as Bernard and et al. Have talked about, and they haven't worked. We've still got young people, despite this place moving away from Cornwall, and we've still got pockets of deprivation in Cornwall which match anywhere else in England. If you look at the statistics. Now that, despite European funding and despite all the other policies that have been adopted, we're still in that position. We haven't moved on. So my view would be, to achieve this, we need to show that the spatial is linked to the cultural. We need to see the local plan reflecting cultural issues in Cornwall, and that's to do with landscape design, it's to do with the way we shape our communities. And this difference needs to be respected, not homogenised, and that the recognition of Cornish ethnicity is not simply a device which is to resolve local politics, but an opportunity to build and develop a case for devolution. Thank you.
Hi, Gratty. Dee Brotherton. I just wanted to correct something that you said about St Ives' situation. My understanding is that St Ives Bay area have to have 1,000 houses built, new houses, before 2030. 700 of those have already, they're either underway or have planning permission. It's of the remaining ones, the 300, that the neighbourhood plan want to put protection on those to be for residential use only, and of 50% of those to be for affordable housing. There's no question of existing owners being stopped from converting their properties, which suggests that they will lose a shed load of money because it will be very limited. I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I'm sorry if I gave that impression, which I'm thinking about it, I probably did, but my point would be 50% affordable housing you might be able to get because it's in the local plan, and if the local plan gets approval, and what I didn't say is all that planning process, although we've got freedom to do what we like, if the planning inspector doesn't like it, tough. You know, it isn't going to happen. You're going to get your local plan thrown out. What you can't do, is my understanding of current planning legislation, you can't earmark certain properties, even if they, which haven't been built, for not being occupied by outsiders or second homeowners and whatever.
And well, this is
the problem in London. This is the problem in London, where you've got a huge issue with people buying up properties in London, people from Hong Kong, other parts of the world, and actually then not occupying those properties or renting them out at exorbitant rents. Now, that issue is not being tackled by current planning policies.
This is my topic, so and I agree with some of what you're saying, that we are bound by the MPPF. There is that top-down element of it. But I did hate to correct you, but in the focus changes that were consulted on in October, we acknowledge the Cornish national minority reference, so it is in there. I mean, obviously, when we consulted back in March, we didn't have it. So we've taken the opportunity to do an extra round of consultation. So it has been acknowledged. I've waded into the St Ives issue this week and have spoken to national press and all sorts. I even took on the planning minister as well over it because I thought his intervention was actually outrageous. There is a precedence of what St Ives are proposing in their draft plan, and that's in Linton and Lynmouth, which is Exmoor National Park. They have the same policy that it should be new homes should be occupied by people with full-time residency. Mm-hmm. Now, that has been found to be compliant with the MPPF, because it's been through referendum, so there's a precedence there.
But is that because it's in a national park?
No difference at all. Okay. So I think that it was a very, very it was quite a helpful intervention that it's raised the topic at the top of the agenda, and this localism versus the planning system. And I fully support St Ives and what they're saying, and I know from my knowledge of how many 70 plus communities that are doing neighbourhood plans in Cornwall, a lot of the others will be having that policy in there, because it's unsustainable to have a community where the rents are 20 times somebody's salary.
But I think, I'm not sure that will be you will have a blanket policy across Cornwall to do that.
No,
because as you know, the or better than I do, the affordable housing policy. You vary it depending on the you know, the part of Cornwall which is under most housing stress, don't you?
Well, it's based on land values, so it's easier to deliver affordable homes in St Ives than it is in Camborne or the Clay area. But we adopted as policy the affordable housing on Wednesday.
Okay.
So it's in place because that's not dependent on the local plan.
Malcolm?
Malcolm Brown. I'm a Cornwall councillor, but I am used to work in planning and then in research for Cornwall County Council. I wanted to make two points, really. One is about the history. I think if you look back at Cornwall County Council's efforts over the years to try to introduce policies which are appropriate for Cornwall, I think we've tried very hard on many occasions and been beaten back. And I'll go right back to the 1980s when there was a policy put in the first alteration to the county structure plan to introduce special controls on the type of housing that was allowed in the area of outstanding natural beauty and in those communities which had the identified largest percentage of second homes, and that was watered down by government. The other point I want to make, because I do agree with your analysis almost completely, and I think the major dilemma at the moment for Cornwall is that if we're going to achieve what you and probably most people in this room want, it's going to be by devolution, i.e. that Cornwall is given powers to do things which won't apply and won't necessarily be wanted for many other parts of the country. I think the danger at the moment is that there could be one of these other splits which we're so good at in Cornwall that everybody wants more devolution, but we might get torn apart on whether we want a souped up Cornwall Council or whether we want a Cornish Assembly. And I think we've somehow got to try to find a common message for government that will give us those powers. And the final thing, I think it's really disappointing, speaking as a Liberal Democrat, that the Liberal Democrats in government have failed to secure progress about devolution to rural areas as well as city regions, because if they were going to start anywhere, the obvious place was Cornwall, and they failed in that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for that, because I would agree very much with what you're saying. I wasn't aware of the history that obviously you know about, but yes, I very much agree with your comments.